talking big heads, dreaming about a Premiership Cup. We love our clubs, but they never win two flags in 100 years. That shit house, if you think we'll be insightful, clever, or just well researched, we're here to say that's not the case. We'll just go out and wing it. We are two guys, one cup.
Hello and welcome to Two Guys, One Cup Summer Edition. My name is Charlie Clawson and this series is called My Club. And this week's guest is someone you may have heard on the show before. He filled in for Will a couple years ago and he also appeared on stage last year after watching the Giants get smashed by Richmond in the grand final. I'm talking, of course, of Alex Williams. He's an actor. You might know him better as Julian Assange or maybe Kurt Pengilly from those respective telemovies. He's also currently appearing in The Heights, but he's a GWS supporter. And as I've found out doing research for this show, it's very hard to get supporters of expansion clubs. But if you have heard those previous episodes, you know that Alex is a dyed-in-the-wool, tried-and-true, one-eyed Giants supporter. So let's get to it. Here's Alex Williams. Alex, you've been on the show before. You filled in for Will. You very bravely took to stage. I wasn't there. It was when my baby was born. But you took to stage with Adam and Michael and Will after your team had lost a grand final. Now, we had Scott Dooley on a couple of weeks ago, and he sort of spoke through what that was like. And he said that because he'd found out that week his father had cancer, luckily it didn't take top spot, but it could have. What was it like for you getting on stage after watching your team get pumped in a grand final?
It took top spot.
that week.
Yeah. That's pretty rough. It sucked. It was awful because I'd had such a good final series up to that point. I was shooting a show in Perth and I just got like 3-4 weeks off and it just lined up with the finals. So I missed the Bulldogs game, but then I flew around like a true nuffy and I flew around Australia and went to Brisbane. Somehow managed to snag a last minute ticket.
Wow.
And then I was watching with a bunch of randoms around me in a very small pocket of Giants supporters. And it was electric. That stadium's really loud. I'm talking about all the positive stuff. But like, it's really loud. Like when they were sort of talking about, having the grand final there, and I was going, it is loud. They were saying it's loud. It is. But that was electric. That was like a last minute hold on. And then the next week we had the Collingwood one and we all know how that went. Mm. So it was just like, I was traveling a lot. I was flying back and forth. I was seeing the same people at the airport and sort of pointing at each other and,
you know what
you
like?
You're like
the Deadheads, the guys who follow the Grateful Dead around. You know how they've been doing it for like 30 years or something? You and your GWS Deadheads.
Yeah, I mean, I really leaned into the fandom. But, and then to kind of have that trip down to Melbourne, I was there with a couple of mates and we'd all got tickets together and some we'd stuffed it up. So we were all separate. And that first quarter, it was just like, you know, Jeremy Cameron kicked that first goal right in front of me. Like it was right in front of me. And I went, oh, this could be good. And then I think at the end of the first quarter, Rioli came and kicked this unbelievable goal, like half a second before the thing. And I went, oh no. Like you could just feel it. And the Richmond fans started going mental and we were like, oh no. And then it just got worse and worse as we got pumped.
So I think you and I can probably relate on that because we have both seen our teams get pumped in a grand final by one of the largest Victorian teams. I was there when Collingwood beat us in the replay and you were there for Richmond. I'd be interested to know what was a more traumatic experience, because I remember hearing the Collingwood like early in the third quarter, because that's how, you know, that was when it was over. And that sort of haunted me. Was there a similar kind of, was there a yellow on black or was there some kind of lasting traumatic?
There's this great moment, which I've never been to a grand final before. So this was my first grand final and there's things that happened that I didn't realize. Like I was quite low, like I was maybe three rows back from the field. And what they do in the last quarter is when they know they're going to win, all of them get they just start coming in like a slow wave down all the aisles, and they basically just take all the seats of the supporters the other team. So they just get up and get, because they want to be down there and take photos with the players and all that kind of stuff. But what it felt like was just a bunch of people in Richmond gear, like slowly just going, get the out of our stadium.
You can swear, it's fine.
And that's pretty much the message. It was awful. I mean, it was an awful day. We sort of, once that had finished, we kind of went, me and my friends just sort of meandered into town and got a beer and went, do you want to be doing this? We go, not really. So we got, you know, a bunch of wine and cheese and watched old grand finals and got pretty drunk.
I remember after the Saints draw, no, the Saints lost to Geelong the year before. I was so drunk by like 7 p.m. that night. I was back at a friend's place in St. Kilda and I was messy as, and I was stumbling out to a cab and I was hanging onto the wall in the nature strip, like wondering, like, do I just throw up now, get it out of the way? Or do I just take the cab ride home and get it out and drink as much water as I can? Because it's just been a horrible day. And as I'm doing that, I hear like scuffling in the bushes and I see there's some dude with like a prostitute, and he comes out and like stares at me, and then I get all righteous. I'm like, oh, I'm the disgusting one, am I? I'm the one who should be embarrassed, spewing into the into the gutter. But then I was like, this is where this day has led me. I have not been able to watch that grand final again. Have you been tempted, curious at all to go back and see what happened?
Absolutely not.
Right.
No. I know what happened. Like, we got out there. I think we got overawed by the moment. I also think going into it, you know, you could say we played our grand final 2 weeks, you know, for 2 weeks leading up to it. But we were also just injured and in a lot of pain. And you just kind of went, I just don't think we're going to get over the line.
It felt like that. It felt like you had played 3 grand finals in a row.
Yeah, he was gone. Because we went out and we were super physical against the Bulldogs as well. And, you know, it comes at a cost playing that kind of football. And I think, you know, Sam, you know, I remember this moment just seeing like Sam Taylor one out against Dusty in the Ford 50, and you're going, oh no. Like, Sam Taylor's a great young player, but he's a fantastic defender. But you just go, that's not it.
I mean, it is a pretty tough opponent to come up against in your maiden grand final appearance, because who knows how far Richmond are going to go. Like, you know, it's 3 out of the last 4, but I could see them very easily taking another one. So if that happens, then I think maybe GWS supporters should feel a little better, because you basically, you know, you stepped out in front of like a freight train as it was leaving the station. It would go on to plow through three more cars, so don't worry about it.
We just really needed to beat the Bulldogs in 2016 before it hit us, you know? It's coming, the freight train, you're just going, oh, let's just sneak a quick one in here. But that didn't work for me, so, you know.
Now, I remember in grand final week just sending a couple of texts back and forth, and it was interesting because the tone of your text and your kind of, you know, the excitement and the optimism and all that kind of stuff I remembered, because grand final week in Melbourne is awesome. Like, it's the best time of the year to be in Melbourne, because it's carnivalesque. Like, it feels like everyone's a football fan for that week, and there's a parade and there's so much press to read and all that kind of stuff. And as I was texting you, I was like, oh, this is kind of weird, like that Alex is so excited about it. And then I remembered your very unique history, which is that you were actually once a Richmond supporter.
I knew
that. And you climbed off that train right before Richmond became who Richmond are now. So, like, it just struck me as what a weird position to be in, like, that you're experiencing this thing for the first time. Did any part of you, is it like seeing your ex-girlfriend and you're like, oh wow, just things have turned out really good for her?
No, it's kind of like I killed the Richmond me a long time ago, you know. It's kind of that feeling of being like, he's dead. He's never coming back. I went 100%, you know, when I moved to Sydney and the year that the Giants started. And it was one of those things where my relationship with football was, I liked football. I'd picked a team as a kid, but I had no connection to it. I knew a couple of the players, and I was, you know, I would follow it. And every time I'd go to Melbourne, people would be like, "Oh, you're Richmond." You know, it was just sort of that schoolyard thing. But there was never the kind of investment or care that I have had for the Giants. So it was one of those things where, you know, people, especially who knew me from when I was little, would be kind of going, "Oh, you know, it's Richmond," and you go, "Yeah, but it's to me at that point, could have been any club. I mean, it's a bit harder because it is them, and I used to go for them. But I, you know, like I identify so much as a Giants supporter that it, you know, I was just disappointed we didn't beat them, because they beat us in 2017 as well in a prelim, and I was in LA for that and ready to fly back for a grand final, and so they, yeah, I'd like to bet.
Well, this is the amazing thing about Giants supporters. Like, I've been to a game with you, and I talked about it on the regular Two Guys, One Cup, where I was really, really impressed with Giants supporters. Like, it felt like, even though there was people there who were new to the game, it was very passionate and very serious about their football. There was a lot of kind of expats from Victoria and WA and stuff who had obviously adopted them. But there was this sense of kind of, I don't know what the word is, but it wasn't a novelty. Like, you can see, even in the early days of seeing the Swans play at the SCG, or, you know, I imagine what it's like seeing the Gold Coast, there's like an element of, this is a bit of a novelty. But GWS take themselves very seriously. And fans like you, it's so interesting to talk to you, because even in their recent history, the way you talk about the culture of the club, old rivalries, you know, teams you have a chip on your shoulder about, all this kind of stuff has happened in a matter of, what, less than a decade?
Yeah. If you think about, like, our first year was 2012, so less than a decade. Yeah. Unbelievable.
That's pretty incredible that a team can do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, sure, you haven't won the grand final yet, but I think it's really impressive what GWS, maybe if you're outside of Sydney, you don't really see it. If you're just watching from Victoria or WA, you might sort of think it is a similar situation to the Gold Coast. But you go to a GWS game, and this is not to diminish the experience, but it reminds me of going to see, like, you know, the VFA or the Waffle in WA, where it's like it's a super high standard, but the crowd is smaller.
Yeah.
You can get around. Like, it's not that, you know, you've got to set aside like 5 hours to, you know, drive through traffic to Punt Road or whatever.
Yeah,
it's a much more accessible experience.
I think that's why I fell in love with it so quickly, because it was, at the start, it was kind of just like going to a country football game. But everyone there at the very beginning was there because they were football fans and expats or old Swans fans, or, you know, coming from all over the shop. And then the energy's so good, and the, like, you know, when you're in the crowd, there's good talk, and the energy like within the club is, we're young, we're proud, we work really hard. And you can tell that they kind of brought in the right people at the right time, you know? So it's sort of got a great feeling about it. And you know, sort of the upper levels of the club and the media team and all that kind of stuff are really good at just connecting early, getting you in, because they have to be. That's their competitive edge, I think, as a club, is be, you know, when you don't have, I've been watching The Crown lately. Yeah, but you know how, like, old families and dynasties have that, like, and in The Crown, it's got this thing of, like, the curse of the family that's been around forever and all these secrets and all these kind of things that are shameful. GWS doesn't have any of that. It's like, you're fresh, you get to start again. And so they kind of have this young energy, and it is whatever you want it to be and whatever these people make it. Maybe I'm being a massive idealist, but that's kind of how it feels. So, yeah, you get a lot of people who, you know, the great transition, I thought, was in like 2015, everyone's second team was the Giants. And then over the last sort of 3-4 years, everyone hates us all of a sudden. And I think that's got to do with being a threat. And also, you know, the way we've played over the last few years has been very aggressive a bit broody at times. But, you know, that's kind of...
Well, it's weird because you're underdogs, for sure. Underdogs in the sense that you're new kids on the block, but you do not present as underdogs in any other aspect.
No. Nah.
The players have a strut about them. Obviously, they're all high draft picks. A lot of them, you know, are well-decorated junior footballers. You're getting pumped in with, you know, AFL cash. So there is this kind of, if you wanted to turn GWS into a villainous team, and I'm not one of these, like I hate those kind of parochial Victorian supporters, or even, you know, Western Australian and South Australian supporters who are very much like, the AFL just wants to expand and, you know, prop these teams up. I'm like, yeah, fucking do it. Like, yeah. I want AFL to be played everywhere. Like, I think it's the best game in the world. And this idea that, you know, because they're a new club or an expansion club, that somehow you don't have good football people in there, that they're just some, you know, hollow husk, I don't think it's true. I mean, Sydney, if you look at Sydney's culture in the last 30 years, like going from when I started taking notice of them was in the early 90s when they were terrible. They'd get like 8,000 people to a game, and then Ron Barassi came in and established a bit of credibility, and then they get Tony Lockett. And what they were able to grind out, that's kind of like the opposite of where GWS are. They'd started like that Bloods culture, that kind of no dickheads policy.
Mm.
Giants have gone a different route. I'm not saying it's an all dickheads policy, but it's definitely they've brought in guys who have a strut about them, are used to success and want success. So was that something that attracted you in the first place, or was that something that you just started to realize after already being on board?
I mean, at the start, like, I just knew that there was going to be a new team in Sydney, and that was all I knew. I think it was in like 2010.
So you're on board. You're on board that early.
Yeah, because I think I was in uni and I was at drama school, and I knew that I would finish at that year and I would move to Sydney at that year. So as soon as I saw the announcement, I was, you know, putting in suggestions for the name of the new team. So I did.
So what was some of your suggestions?
This is embarrassing, but I went for the, I'm not sure if they even have them here, but I wouldn't know that because I was in Perth, but they're called wagtails. They're like those little birds that kind of little black birds that sit in parks and just wag their tail from left to right. And I thought the Western Sydney wagtails is a good name, because it's sort of that idea of just like, you know, floating around, talking smack. I just thought that was a pretty good idea, but didn't go with that one.
Sounds like a kid's animated cartoon, the wagtails.
The wagtails. It would have looked awful next to like the hawks and the eagles and the magpies and the wagtails. We're just hanging out, having fun.
Were there any other names that you can remember?
No, I think I left it at wagtails, and sadly they didn't take my advice on that one. But yeah, I think as it grew, you know, because we had players like, you know, Toby Green would be kind of the main one, but there are a lot of, you know, we also brought in a few players like that, like Stevie J, who they're trying to breed in competitive edge into some of these guys. What premiership teams win without that?
Yeah. I mean, I can't really think of a team.
Like, how many nice teams, you know, it's the unsociable Hawks. It's, you look at like, I think there's a bit of that around, and I think it's an okay to, you know, sort of tactic to take it apart. We also have a lot of nice guys in our
team. I was at that Bulldogs elimination final last year with Bulldog supporters, and watching how they roughed up the Dogs and stuff, even though the Dog supporters were irate, the quick survey I did at the game's end, all of them were like, oh, well, we'd love a Toby Green, or we'd love to play like that. Like, they didn't walk out of the game thinking you'd cheated or that's the only way you can win. I think what infuriates people is you've got skills, but you're also tough as well, you know? And I think that's, I don't know anyone who dislikes the Giants as being like, you know, like cheats or anything like that. To me, it's just more about, you know, they hate us because they ain't us. Like, that's the.
Yeah. I mean, there's a bit of timing with that one as well, with the Bulldogs fairy tale and, you know, that one in particular, I think there was, you know, the week before we'd played them or a couple of weeks before, I can't remember exactly, but like, you know, the Bont had basically broken Nick Haynes, you know, larynx or something like that. So there was history there. There was a reason they went out to, you know, to get him. And they thought that that was the best way to win. So I'm all right.
I mean, you know,
but maybe that's the, maybe the club's turning me into a colder, meaner person. Maybe.
Well, no, don't feel so bad. I can't name the person, but I have inside word from the Bulldogs. And the dislike of GWS is apparently very real. Not a lot of love lost.
It's pretty firm at the Giants. We do not, like, that's our team that we love beating.
Yeah. Because of 2016.
Can't stand them. Yeah, but every time we play them, it's like hotly contested and pretty brutal. Yeah. And it started way before 2016.
Yeah. I guess it's maybe the midfield thing.
Well, not way before, a couple of years before.
Yeah, like it's all relative, mate. The league's been around for 134 years. Got a cult.
Exactly. When my dad was playing for the Giants in the 70s, they had a massive rivalry.
So growing up in WA, you said you had a team in Richmond, but you weren't overly connected to them. What about the Waffle? Like, were you involved in that at all? Did you take any interest in that?
Not really. I mean, Dad played a little bit for West Perth, but, you know, he went on and played water polo professionally. So we kind of didn't. No, the Waffle wasn't really our thing. I think it was Claremont, actually. I can't even remember what team he played for. So, yeah. No, the Waffle wasn't a huge thing. I mean, I was a big basketballer anyway at that time. So, I loved watching AFL, but, you know, the Tigers weren't amazing at that time. And it was just like the concerted move. Like, I was into the AFL, loved the competition, but just didn't have that, you know, desire to have a club. So this was kind of the moment.
The amazing thing about the way you've, you know, taken to the Giants is I feel like, you know, of everyone I've talked to on this show, a lot of them have been, you know, like multiple decades of supporting, but you've had this like compressed, concentrated burst of fandom of, you know, finding the club and falling in love with them. And, you know, and you have had highs and lows. Like, you've really done the whole gamut of experiences in a very short time. Was there a player that first won you over?
Yeah. Early it was, Canelio, he has always been my favorite player. Like, he's just a tough WA kid with skills on both feet. And he's just got that kind of, you know, when he runs, he doesn't take kind of long strides. He takes like quick, small steps.
Yeah.
I always just really enjoyed it. It looks like kind of like a Mario brother going, I know this. But he does. They're like, brrr. And he just found space. And it's one of those smaller players that just is really tough inside and kind of stood up in the right moments. And one of those players where you'd be like, oh, I haven't seen Canelio all day. And you're like, oh, he's got 17 touches at the half and, you know, a bunch of inside 50s, but you just don't see him. You don't see the work he does. So he was kind of my, you know, he's been my favorite up until sort of, you know, we became the captain and, you know, that's a lot to deal with. But there are some cult favorites. Like Harry Perryman is just brilliant. I love it. Yeah. He's just like a complete farm boy. And I had a chat to him once in the rooms, and I think it was after we played Carlton. And I went up to him. I was like, "G'day, mate." You know, we got introduced. He goes, "G'day, mate. How you going?" He's like, "Good." He was like, "His country's all get out." And I instantly was like, "Oh my god! Like, I shouldn't be in the same room as this bloke. Like, he's just so blokey." And but he was just
you suddenly. Yeah, very
I was like, "So what happened tonight?" And he goes, "Oh, they didn't show up, did they?" And I went, "Fantastic. That's exactly like, oh, they didn't show up, did they? Yeah, no, we smacked him." It was just like, he just loved it. Loved thrashing them. Anyway. Then them and like Nick Haynes.
Yeah, he's a great player.
Can't go past him. Just class.
Tell me, has your attempt to create a nickname for Harry Himmelberg, how's that going? You debuted it a couple of years ago as it caught fire. Do you want to tell people what you call him?
I call him the disaster artist. No one else does. I got a lot of those.
What do you want to say?
When I do get the chance to sit up in the box with, you know, some people at the club, and I yell quite loud a lot of the nicknames that I have, and they are just completely confused.
Before we hear some of these names, explain why Harry Himmelberg is the disaster artist.
Well, it's just Himmelberg, Hindenburg, Hindenburg disaster, the disaster artist.
In true AFL tradition, the nickname takes about six steps to get to it.
All right, we were going to call him the room, but we just went, oh, no, I can't. Let's stop it at once.
What are some other nicknames?
Oh, geez. Oh, you put me on the spot now. I should have written them down.
I can't
remember. Look, you've done, not sure. I'll hit you with them later.
So you were talking about, Perryman being a cult hero, but I think Toby Green, to most outside supporters, would be your cult hero because I think every AFL fan, if they were honest with themselves, loves Toby Green. Like, there's just an aspect to him. Well, what's that classic old cliche of you'd love him in your team? Like, everyone wants that tough, skillful, slightly psychotic Cabbage Patch doll. I mean, there's something going on behind his eyes. The crazy thing is, I know a lot of people who work in football and even journalists and stuff, and they all say the same thing. He's a great guy. Like, he's one of the loveliest, nicest guys.
Tea drinker, head kicker.
Yeah,
I reckon he's got the biggest, like, divide from off-field and on-field that I've ever seen in the AFL. Like, you know, all reports are just very chill, doesn't get on his phone much, just reads the morning paper, drinks tea all day, very relaxed, watch the sunset, and then just goes out and builds people.
You know,
but, you know, like, he's brilliant. He was brilliant.
You know who else does that, just gets up and reads the paper and drinks all day? Serial killers. That is, you've just described the day of a sociopath.
He's reading the paper so he can cut out the letters and send death threats notes to other teams.
Look, I am a big Toby Green fan, and I think it's all part of the theater of it. Like, we need villains. How do you think he's regarded amongst, like, the supporters? Like, is anyone frustrated by the fact that he gets suspended, or is it not? He's untouchable.
I think it's frustrating, but he's untouchable. I think someone was telling me at the club that they did a sort of survey of, who were the kind of most popular players amongst supporters. Yeah. Like, they send out their supporter surveys and all that kind of stuff. And apparently it came back as, like, 80% of supporters' favorite player was Toby Green. Then it was like 10 or 13% Jeremy Cameron, and then kind of just under that. Like, he's that popular, especially with the kids. I think he's going to be our first kind of, when you think of GWS, you think Toby Green. So I think that will be, especially now that Jeremy Cameron is gone.
Yeah.
I think who could have been kind of on that pedestal and, you know, played one club player sort of thing. Franchise player, Toby Green.
Yeah, and he also does, like, there's certain players who seem to epitomize, you know, the qualities of the team. Like, I always thought Matthew Richardson used to epitomize what Richmond were like back in those days, you know, like, could be brilliant but also incredibly flaky but just kind of lovable. And I think Toby Green is, you want to like him but you're also terrified of him. And I think that could sum up most of the AFL's attitude towards the Giants is, I don't think there's a footy fan out there who doesn't love, you know, seeing the orange tsunami or just the way those players connect, but you just don't want it to be against your club.
Yeah, and I think that's good for us because, you know, you don't want to be the club that people go, oh yeah, easy beat, you know, we like them. So I think it's good. I think it's good for our club's personality and our narrative.
So tell me, there's something that I've been thinking about with GWS that concerns me a little bit, and you would probably have thoughts on this. And I think that we're sort of seeing this start to happen now, which was, I've always thought that, you know, they didn't win the grand final in 2016. They didn't win it last year, and they've been very, very good. And Leon Cameron's record, you know, is not in question and any of that kind of stuff. But the problem is, once you get to sort of that 10-year mark and players are dropping off and you're trading out, and they've had so many draft picks for so long, but is there enough in this club that if, say, they don't have to bottom out, but they'd have to dip, you know, because they need to get draft picks in or whatever, is there enough stability at the club for them to go through that? Like, if it's a 1 or 2 year thing, then sure. But, you know, sometimes those rebuilds, as a guy who barracks for a team,
it's eternally doing it.
Yeah, 2014 saying road to 2018. I can tell you sometimes the best laid plans. But why do you think GWS is equipped to sort of overcome a dip if they have to go through one?
Well, I think it's because that's been what we've built our whole club on, is draft, like, developing good draft picks and, like, top level draft picks. I think that's why every year, like, I'm watching the draft right now, but, like, every year you go, oh, the Giants have a couple of top 10 picks or at least a few in the 20, like, within the first 20. And it's because the talent that we do get, we develop really well. They turn into good players, and then other teams have to come and get them, which is painful, but they come and get them and they give up more picks and future picks. And then we develop those. So you kind of worry that, hey, you'll end up as a feeder club.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, you end up getting picks back, and the Giants tend to keep the guys they really, really want. You know, like last year, you know, we picked up Lachie Ash and Tom Green, which are really two top three selections. So you kind of go with those two. Yeah, we lost Caldwell and Haitley, but were they going to get a game with those two coming through anyway? The toughest one, it was losing Jeremy Cameron, because that wasn't about money or opportunity. You know, Caldwell and Haitley and the like left because they couldn't get a game and they wanted to play and they're top picks. So you understand that. But and Zach Williams was, we're not going to pay $850,000, $900,000 for a guy who, you know,
you've got four of.
He's a halfback flanker and he's a really, really good player. Like, you'd love to have him, but we're not going to pay that amount of money because we have to pay a premium for other players anyway. Yeah. So, but Jeremy Cameron's that tough one because that's like your figurehead and he wasn't going to earn any more money. It was just a lifestyle thing. A lot of these players leave and none of them ever say anything bad about the club. So I think like long-term, yeah, like I think they're not going to go, oh, we're going to rebuild. It's just going to be top up, top up, top up for a bit. Obviously at some stage it's going to get to breaking point, but I think we've got a good enough list to reset and do pretty well this year.
I mean, you're right. Other AFL clubs should be grateful to GWS because if nothing else, they are excellent junior talent developers. I mean, St Kilda got Jack Steele from GWS.
Oh my God. I was so annoyed when we got rid of him.
Yeah, well, but that's exactly the same reasons. You know, he couldn't get an opportunity. I remember reading about like a year out from when we traded for him. And so I started paying a bit of attention and I was like, yeah, he's a good player, but look at their midfield. You know what I mean?
Who's he going to get in front of? And then he would have had people nipping at his heels as well. You know, he would have had Tim Taranto and Jacob Hopper. He's going, well, how am I going to get a game? So I think Caldwell is probably the same, especially because he's a little undersized. And you know, when he's got Tom Green, who looks like a jet playing, and he's much, much bigger and looks pretty good. So, yeah, it's an interesting one, though, because, you know, that's the thing that you read in the media constantly is, you know, feeder club and draft picks and blah, blah. But the thing is, at the end of the day, they pick players that are, like, highly talented and then they develop them well. So that's a good thing because I think, you know, you look at a lot of clubs, they get high picks and they don't necessarily develop them as well as they could.
So. Yeah, no. You're talking to a guy. His club is.
I wasn't talking directly at you, but you were in the room.
Yeah, it's. I do wonder, and I'm fascinated. One of the reasons I started this podcast is the culture of a club. You know, the idea that lists can change, administrations can come and go, but there is a culture or a vibe, a marbo to a club that seems to endure. And so, if you had to distill it down into, you know, a couple of sentences, what do you think the culture of GWS is? For example, like, you know, is it sort of the like the Silver Tails like Carlton, or is it us against the world like, you know West Coast, or what's the vibe of GWS?
Good question. I think it's a bit like, you know, when you're 16, 17 and you're like, fucking, you've got that Superman complex and you're like, young.
Full of piss and vinegar.
Exactly right. Full of piss and liquor. How would you describe your club? I think it is that. It's like, you know, the arrogance of youth maybe. Just rocking up and showing up and doing everything they can to get across the line, and sometimes it's enough.
But that can't last forever because you're not going to always be the youth club in 10 years' time.
We will mature into an even stronger man.
Well, it's interesting because we're sort of seeing this happen in real time. Like the cultures of these other clubs I've talked about have taken, you know, decades to form, and Richmond have completely transformed their culture. You know, 2016 was Richmondy. And then now you look at them and it's like, who is this? They're like this kind of, this beast, this kind of, could be a new dynasty, a football club. But with GWS, I'm very interested to see how they go next year because I don't know that. I think losing Jeremy Cameron stings more now, but maybe in the long run, this is kind of what you need, because if you're on a dip or a downward trajectory, the idea being that, you know, you've played finals, grand final, and then, you know, knocked out before the finals the following year. So some clubs will hold on and try and sort of climb back up that ladder, or some will get the scalpel out and, you know, say, okay, well, we'll get him, we'll lose him for nothing. So let's, you know, get draft picks now or trade for him or whatever. But what they do with that now, because they've lost one of their figureheads, will be really interesting. Because having said that, the identity that I think most people give to GWS isn't Jeremy Cameron. Because I didn't know this until I heard Jeremy Cameron speak, but he's such a country boy. Like, I assumed he was this kind of like Nathan Buckley, private school, perfectionist, you know, doesn't take failure. But you see him talk and he's quite laid back and, you know, loves fishing and all that kind of stuff.
Not at all. All he ever talks about is fishing. Just like 100%. I reckon if you went up to him after a game in the rooms and was just like, oh, that was a bloody great game, wasn't it, mate? And he'd just go fishing, marlin. Like he'd just start naming fish. Like he's obsessed with it. And I think maybe he fished out Sydney Harbour and that's why he moved.
Cryo Bay. Because
he's
look
gone
out.
To absolute, yeah, he's just gone, all right, well, I've caught everything in New South Wales. So maybe it's time to make a move. But
I mean, I remember when the Saints lost Lockett in 95, that felt like, well, what are we going to do? Like, he's easily our best player. He's a, you know, once in a generation forward, all the similarities are there. But from that, you know, we were able to go to the draft and able to get like Ozzie Jones and Tony Brown and Joel Smith. And we make the grand final 3 years later. Like, it's amazing how, I'm like this. I get very emotional every time players retire from St Kilda. Like, I remember when Rob Harvey retired, I was like, I'm never going to feel the same about football again. It's like when Lenny Hayes retired, I'm never going to love again.
I think it's one of those things as well. We sort of built this three-headed dragon in our forward line and, you know, we lost the key head. But, you know, we've brought in Hogan, who I think is an interesting experiment, basically plug and play. But I don't know if he will play because we have Riccardi, who looks like seriously good and is a very different sort of style player than Jeremy Cameron. He's not you're really trying to get out the back much at all. He's your sort of lead up jumping forward. So, I think you've got two options there. So,
do the Giants have much of a history like the Swans of taking, GOPs from other clubs and turning them into good role players? Like in the same way that the Saints got like Dan Butler from Richmond, is there anyone? Because when I think of GWS, I think of like the veterans that you brought in to mentor. But have you been able to draft kind of, you know, mid-age players who've flourished at GWS?
Maybe not mid-age. I mean, the big one that we picked up was Matt DeBoer, who, you know, basically got dropped by Freo and picked him up, put him in a leadership role within a year and is just the best tagger in the game at the moment. So you kind of, those ones, I mean, Riccardi last year with, you know, hadn't been picked up.
That must have felt nice.
I'm on the Riccardi train for sure.
The GWS admin board must have been like, thank God that we get to poach a player from someone else. Like, we got one with the ball. Yes.
We got one back, baby.
Yeah, one versus 23, but still.
Finally. Yeah. They're just sitting there and surrounded by draft picks, swimming in them going, God, I'd like a player. Nice.
So was there any time in the very early years when you're getting regularly beaten by 10 goals, was there any point of view that was like, maybe this flower is not going to bloom? Maybe were you losing interest or did you always maintain the faith?
No, it was always pretty interesting because you could see the sprouts, you know, like I really like Treloar and watching the way that Collingwood has dealt with him made me go, come back, child. But it was one of those things where you kind of, you know, you could see the sprouts and you could go, oh, they're going to be really good. But we, at that time, we were also playing a very young and, you know, run and gun style play. That's where the whole orange tsunami came from. It was like, hey, go out there, run, try and play. We're getting belted the other way. But that's how you learn two-way running a little bit. Now we don't really do that anymore. We play very kind of dour defensive football. And I think people kind of think that we're still doing that, but we haven't played like that for a couple of years. And it's kind of frustrating to watch, you know, the way that we won those finals last year was just holding on, like just defensive structures, flooding back, getting a little cheap goal out. It's kind of, a lot of people get frustrated with the way that Leon Cameron sort of set it up, but you know, I think that'll change next year because they have to. They've moved some coaches on, and losing Matty Nix, I think, was a big one as well.
Yeah. So you've made lots of finals, made a grand final, but you still haven't won one. So
thanks for that.
Questions. Yeah, sorry. Do you think letting Israel Folau go was a big mistake?
Look, talking about cultures in clubs, I just think that we missed out on a huge opportunity with him. Like, how Rugby Australia messed that up is beyond. If someone gets that quote, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
No. I mean, yeah. Yeah. Jeez.
At the time, even with the Carmichael Hunt thing,
yeah.
I like pro wrestling, so I get it. It's a way to sell papers.
Oh,
it's a way
absolutely.
We're talking about it. And I think that even if you can knock off like or get one little column in the Daily Telegraph, you know, about your new AFL team because Israel Folau is playing, then it was probably worth it.
Yeah. I did see him absolutely crunch someone once. So, you know, first year, there wasn't much to cheer about, but that was pretty cool.
And the year since, there's been really not a lot to cheer about.
Yeah, well, you know.
So I think I'll know the answers to these questions.
Oh, yeah.
But I have some things I like to get to each week. So can you tell me what was your happiest memory with the Giants so far?
Do you want to have a ping?
The last year's prelim.
I'll just Collingwood, check no? the – check the yes. That is. No, it was great. Like, because I was in the cheer squad and I had gotten a couple of extra tickets somehow. And it was a really weird day and it was sunny. It was sunny, but it was doing that Melbourne thing where it's bright as anything, but there's rain kind of coming down sideways. So you kind of have this weird rainbow and it was beautiful. Like, it was full. And we had this, like, just one lane of Giant supporters back sort of three tiers. And they were loud, and it was impressive, and it was a close game. I actually had a mate with me who had to go see his friend's Melbourne Fringe show, and I kind of got the last minute ticket. I was like, "Hey, mate, you know, he's a massive footy fan, Saints fan," and I was like, "Do you want to come along?" And he goes, "Yeah, but I might have to leave a little bit early." I'm going, "You can anyway." So it gets to three quarter time, and he turns to me, he does a cardinal sin. He turns to me, he goes, "I got to go, but you've got it." And I went,
you mother.
Son of a. Anyway, then that fourth quarter, Collingwood just started coming. And I'm texting him going, "I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you." But I was in that, you know, it was great because you had all these like really young supporters. And I was there with a friend of mine whose cousin plays for the Giants. And, you know, I went back and looked at a couple of the videos from that day. And I can't remember the last time I was that happy, like just pure joy. I can remember because it was the week before against Brisbane. Like it was unbelievable. I turned to the side and there was this guy on my left, kind of one row down, just hands in his head, sobbing, like just over in the chair, not even looking at everyone else is partying and the Collingwood supporters are all leaving and it's great. And he's just sobbing in a Giants Guernsey. And I went, that's pretty amazing. Like someone cares that much. Like I thought I was a freak for caring that much that quickly. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there that care a lot and it's cool to see.
Yeah, there was a guy I worked with, a grip who was an expat Victorian, Saints supporter growing up, but had jumped on the Giants. And he was so, like you, really literate in the Giants world and kind of passionate and was the kind of guy who would track kind of like junior competitions,
oh, yeah.
the draft picks. Like took it really, really seriously. And that's, again, what I was most impressed with when you took me into that game is that at one stage, and I'm not sure if this is a regular thing, but they were putting up explainers for like certain, like a decision would get made. And then on this big screen, a little pop-up explainer would pop up.
Yeah.
But the crowd was not like, they would, even if they didn't understand what the rules were, they just knew that they would boo the opposition and cheer their team.
Yeah.
I was so impressed with kind of like how seriously they took it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, one of my favorite things about home games is we've got this guy where my member seats are that's, you know, just like a row behind us. And every single game, without, like, from the start of when I started going, because I've kind of got the same seats, he will commentate out loud the whole game and get like getting most of the names wrong, but like really giving it a go, and not quietly, like loudly for the first two quarters. Third quarter, he goes, gets pie. Fourth quarter, he's back on, you know, and he just sort of eats there quietly. But like, bizarre, but we love it. We sit there every time. Yeah. We're like, oh, he's got, no, he's, no, he never gets his name right. He's got no idea what number that is, but it's, you know, it's that kind of stuff, which you kind of, the sort of the talk around the stadium's really nice. And when other people come out to Giant Stadium, and I take a lot of people out there, you know, to get them involved, or when our team's playing against them, and not a lot of people go, oh, no, nah, it's a shitty little stadium that, you know, why are they even there? Like, they always come back going, that's fun. You know, that's fun. You got a little more space. You don't have any of that aggro stuff that you can sometimes get. And it's a really nice atmosphere. I've made like genuine friends just meeting people at the football. I mean, it's bizarre. Yeah. That's strange to me.
My only knock on Giant Stadium is that there is no proper hot jam donut stand anywhere.
Yeah.
I did a lap, and it's like, what kind of hell world is this where you can't get a hot jam donut? If I can't buy 8 hot jam donuts for under $10, I can't buy them at all.
Mate.
There was a Zhuzhi cafe there that had one of your fancy bloody coconut encrusted donuts. I'm like, this is garbage. This is what GWS need to get right in their culture. Donuts.
We've got Goslemes, but no, but no donuts out there.
Now, I assume the answer to this question is the following week. Your most crushing experience with the Giants?
No, it's Bulldogs 2016 was the hardest one. Yeah, it was also the best game of football I think I've ever seen. It was
incredible.
Incredible. Like, electric. I wasn't there, which was so frustrating, but, that was the hardest one. And the grand final, it was, you know, we'd won quite a few weeks, and I kind of got to that point where it's like, even if we lose, it's been a great journey, and I kind of got to the end. But that Bulldogs prelim was just, I guess your first is always the hardest.
But is it something to do with the fact that you felt like if you had won that year, maybe you could have gone?
We would have won. We would have won for sure. I know that we would have won. We'd smash Sydney, and we had their number, and I just think, you know, the Bulldogs were the ones that were gonna stand in anyone's way. So yeah, that was pretty frustrating. But you know, yeah, I think the grand final was always gonna hurt if we lost. But I think I still remember how I felt in 2016 and the close ones. But, you know, we didn't even get close in the grand final really. But yeah, I was in a pub in Perth. At the Giants, I think I told this last time, but at the Giants supporter group pub function, but it was actually run by the same people who ran the Bulldogs one, and so I rocked up, and I was there would have been 2 Giants supporters there. They gave me the raffle jersey because no one wanted it, I'm allowed, as you've experienced, I'm a pretty loud and vocal.
You are.
I can ruffle some feathers and
especially with the bloody nicknames you keep shouting.
Oh, yeah. The one that I can remember. It was just painful. It was a painful day.
Yeah, it's funny. When I was talking to Titus, he's a Demons supporter, Titus O'Reilly, and we were talking about, like, you know, that greatest memory, and his was a prelim and mine was a prelim, and everyone I've spoken to in this show whose team hasn't won a grand final is a prelim. And then you think about being a Hawks supporter, because I haven't interviewed a Hawks supporter yet. But when
don't,
I ask them,
just
what's
don't,
your happiest...
I reckon.
Either
I reckon you just leave them. Yeah. What do you need? Like,
yeah. Because they just can't wait to just sift through all the grand final.
You know what?
Victories.
The worst bit is when they just start, this year. You're like, yeah. I reckon don't. I mean, 17 teams.
Do you reckon, do the Bulldogs hold, I know that there's a rivalry with the club, but are they your most loathed team because of 2016?
Yeah, I think that was a hard year because everyone wanted them to win. it was the fairy tale. And since that point, you know, up until that point, that, you know, the Bulldogs, we'd had a few kind of, but it had really sort of started to get going after that. And the Bulldogs, I don't like them. Don't like them.
It's funny.
I like their support. I like their supporters. I don't mind their team. I just, not something.
Well, I mean, you know, they only have a few more supporters than GWS, to be honest.
It's true. We're catching. We're nipping at the heels.
Yeah. But it's funny. Will's brought up before the idea that you guys should really be friends. I mean, this might be the part of the movie where you meet and you don't like each other, but then you team up because you're both representing the West of your respective cities, you know, both the working class, you know, migrant communities. Like, you guys should be sharing resources and be best friends. But for some reason, I guess the league's not big enough for two of you.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe we're sort of twins separated at birth and gone and live different lives, and you just have to come back and kill the other one. Clones. I don't know. It's something like that. Who's your most hated?
Most loathed team? It's shifted around a lot. For a long time, it was Adelaide, and I think that was a lot to do with after the 97 grand final, and Adelaide had only been in the comp for, I think, 7 years, maybe 6 years. I remember leaving that grand final, and even before that, when Jarman started going berserk in the last quarter to put them, you know, well out of reach of us, their fans started like clapping and cheering and stuff. And I heard one of them say something like along the lines of, "Oh, that'll show Sam Newman." And I remember sitting there dumbfounded and going, "Is that what this means to you, Sam fucking Newman? Like, this is my family's legacy.
Yeah.
Like, this is something I've grown up with. Like, I have sweated, you know, red, white, and I've sweated blood, bled red, white, and black for years." And for them, it was just more, we'll stick it up the Victorians. And they just didn't have a connection to just how monumentous that feeling, you know, that thing was. And so they became my object of hate for a while. And then just because they had Adelaide the title, it was Port Adelaide as well.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I don't know if I really hate any. Oh, you know what it is? It's a weird one. But I love beating Geelong and I love beating Melbourne. Melbourne, I don't know what it is. It might be just some
kicking
sadistic
down kind of weird thing.
Kicking someone is down. But Geelong, I think it's just like that should have been us. Like Geelong and St Kilda in 2006 had lists that were laden with talent, you know, both predicted to go a long way, and they got their shit together and we just couldn't. And I think that there's just, we can't beat them. Like we never seem to be able to beat them.
I think now that I'm sort of thinking about it a little more, you know, the Bulldogs on field, I hate them. But really off field, they're not the worst and their fans aren't the worst. It's more, you know, those big clubs that you know, like Collingwood, that you love to hate and going to those prelims and dealing with them. Like the Brisbane fans were great. I mean, they were happy about it, but the Collingwood fans were...
There's something rough. Weird, though, about being treated nitis. I remember going to a game at Subiaco, and there's a similar situation to you where I walked in. It was like the Eagles president's lunch, and I was like the only St Kilda person there. So, mate, because I walked in a suit and then realized I had no paraphernalia, so I ran down to the merch table and got myself the most ostentatious, like, St Kilda merch to put on.
Has to be done.
And sat amongst all them. But they were lovely. But part of me was like, oh, don't do this. Because they were smashing us. It was 2014 when we finished last. And I was like, I don't need your condescension. I would rather that we were like throwing barbs at each other than this, like, oh, no, he seems like a good player and you guys are showing a lot of spirit. Like, I don't want to hear any of that shit.
Yeah. It's always funny with those rooms and when you're in sort of an area that's sort of speckled between different different supporter groups, because there's sometimes you're in one where the banter is good and there's a few barbs, but it's all in good fun and everyone's having a good time. Yeah. But, you know, in that prelim and stuff like that, it just was like we had this couple behind us, this Collingwood couple just losing their minds at, you know, these kind of kids getting up and dancing. And then they, you know, at some point they vomited and walked away. And I went, I've never seen anything more Collingwood in my life. Just got really uppity, vomited, bailed. Fantastic. Wow. Anyway, there you go. That's football, baby.
I'm going to finish with one question that I ask everyone. And I don't know, I normally can guess from talking to one of my guests which way they're going to lean, but I'm not sure with you. So if GWS were to fold for some reason, if they, not to merge, but to actually fold, do you think you could find another club and move on? Or do you think you'd maybe step back from football a bit?
Both teams.
What do you mean? Richmond as well?
No, do I lose the women's team as well?
No, women's can stick around, just the men's.
I'll just follow the women's, I think. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And so what would your relationship to the men's competition be?
I mean, I watch a lot of NBA and other sports, and I don't have teams. Like, I don't have a team in the NBA. I've watched it my whole life. And I've just never had that kind of real drive and connection to one team where I've gone, oh, I'm a 76ers guy. I'm a Boston guy. Like, that's who I am. But I kind of have that with this. So I don't think I could.
All right, well,
I'd follow it. I wouldn't support another team.
I'm coming in. I'm closing down the women as well.
You're what?
80s. I'm 80s. I'm some 80s businessman villain.
Yeah.
The men are gone. The women are gone. So GWS is no more. What do you do?
Yeah. I'm out.
Really?
I'd probably be out. I'd watch. Yeah. I'd watch games.
I like it.
But I'd be out.
I like it. I can see it now. You speak with conviction. It makes sense that you wouldn't.
It'd also piss me off to no end. I'd be like, oh, man, I can't even think about how furious. I'm so annoyed every time there's like North Melbourne. Like they're like, oh, get rid of them. All this kind of, same with Gold Coast. Oh, just fold it. It's not working. It's like good things take time to build.
Yeah.
Like people coming in and going, oh, my club's got all this heritage and heritage. I was like, yeah, where do you think that comes from? You got to start somewhere. You can't just jump on something else your whole life. So, yeah, no, I think I'm so deep into it. You know, I'm constantly getting teased by my girlfriend because she notices how often during the day I'm just Googling GWS Giants. You're just Googling your team, are you? And I'm like, oh, fuck, I was. And so I've gotten around it because I've just set up Google alerts. Bang. Done. Don't have to handle it.
I mean, I'm laughing, but I was busted last night Googling my team.
Yeah.
I was like, I haven't heard anything in a few weeks. I just want to see if there's any press before the press. What's their draft strategy?
Yeah.
I feel like I need to know.
But it's kind of shameful because you kind of – when you don't think about it when you just start chucking to Google, GWS Giants, and then when she points it out, are you Googling just the name of your team and looking at news?
Yeah.
I'm going, well, yeah, I do this like 5 times a day. Anyway.
Yeah, but isn't it – it's weird though. Like there's never been more football info or content online than ever before. Like it's crazy, but I'm the same. Like I thought with like, you know, shows 5 nights a week – you know, podcasts, you know, every team has a great digital department that sort of does updates. I thought that there would be too much information. Turns out there's not.
Nah. That's what I loved as well with the Giants stuff, all that. Like we just jumped on the meme train at the right time. Like there's so much material, yeah. Giants material out there. Maybe it's a younger demo. There's a lot going on.
I mean, that is actually something worth noting. The big, big sound.
Oh,
meme, like. That's the kind of thing that could make your club. And I'm being 100% serious.
Stuff Toby Green. We're going the meme team, baby.
Yeah, but there's a lot of affection for that meme and it sort of does give your club a fun identity. Like every time you guys play finals again, that meme is going to come out. And it's like the yellow and black. And it's funny too because the moment I realized that song had something was after – the Bulldogs lost last year when you beat them in the elimination final. I was catching the train back with Will and there was quite a few doggy supporters around. And I was just like humming, bum, 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 bum. And then everyone started doing it as well. And it's like, yeah, it's actually a really fucking catchy song.
It slams. It's a fantastic. You can just start it anywhere and people just start jigging. It's fantastic.
Bum, 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 bum. Well, that's a great place to finish it. Alex, before we go, any predictions for the Giants in 2021?
Premiership. I think we're well placed to go deep into finals. I think like we had a tough year as far as some I just don't think we dealt with the lockdown very well at all. I think we've got a built a culture around a sort of centre and people's families kind of creating their own routines in Sydney. And we play really well at home and in Canberra. And I think if we get that back and we've got a little bit more to prove after last year, I think if the bodies can stay right, we'll be decent. We'll be decent.
Intriguing. I'm not sure I 100% agree with you.
I'm not sure I 100% agree with me. But, you know, always an optimist. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Alex, thanks very much.
Thanks, mate. We are two guys, one car.